Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Did you know that there have been only two NFL players all time to have career averages of at least 5 yards per carry and at least 90 rushing yards per game? Now, right now, Jonathan Taylor, he's averaging 90.9 rushing yards per game at a 5 yard per carry career average. He would be the third in NFL history if this keeps up. Who are the other two? I love trivia, and I will tell you the answer at the end of the show. This is The Numbers Game. I'm Cynthia Freeland, and let's break down the remaining 13 NFL games for Week 10. We're going to cover all 13 remaining games in this episode, which includes Monday Night Football. Usually that's a separate episode. Why? Because we have a special mid-season episode dropping early next week. It has forward-looking win totals, player projections for the rest of the season. We'll touch on what happened in the first half and all the moves that were made at the trade deadline and basically set everything up to be tracking as we march towards the playoffs. So look for that early next week. And remember, Monday Night Football is at the end of this episode. Let's recap my week 9 results. I went 10-4 straight up, 8-6 against the spread, and 5-9 on totals. That brings my season to 62.2% straight up, 57.1% against the spread, and 60% on totals. The second to last international game this season happens on Sunday. It's actually the fifth game ever in Germany, but the first in Berlin. Olympic Stadium will become the 35th different international venue, and it should be a good game with the number one scoring offense against the number one pass defense. That is Indianapolis and Atlanta squaring off in Berlin. The Falcons have the number one passing defense, and the Colts have the number one scoring offense at 32.2 points per game. Fun fact, the number one scoring offense has won 10 of 11 matchups against the number one passing defense since 2007. The Colts are favored by 6 points. The total in this one, 48.5. My model says, a very football score, Colts win 28-21. So let's cover the news first. Obviously, the Jets traded Sauce Gardner to the Colts on Tuesday in exchange for a 2026 first round, a 2027 first round, and A.D. Mitchell. Now, Gardner is the first player in NFL history to be traded within a year of signing a $100+ million contract, and he should play. So let's start with the Falcons offense against Sauce and his new teammates. 76% of Bijan Robinson's rushes have come outside the tackles. That is the highest rate in the NFL, and he's averaged 4.5 yards after contact per carry on them. That's third most. It is also nearly a yard more than between the tackles. So the difference outside versus inside, inside is 3.6, outside 4.5. And Robinson has a league high 477 yards on outside the tackles rushes. Guess who has 11 more yards then? Jonathan Taylor, who's on the other side of this matchup. The Colts defense has allowed the second fewest yards after contact per carry to running backs on interior rushes at 2.3. And on rushes outside the tackles, it's 3.2 yards after contact per carry. So that's just a little bit better than league average. The league average is 3.5 yards. Remember how we talked about the Falcons being kind of maybe two different teams, like a bit confusing? Perhaps one area that our eye test is flagging in that is the passing game on third down. So Michael Penix Jr. has thrown past the sticks on 71% of his third down attempts. That's the highest rate in the league. I'm not really sure why he's doing this, because the Falcons are averaging the fifth fewest yards to go on third down at 6.4. And so what happens when he does? Well, he's only completing 52% of these passes, the fifth lowest rate in the league. Overall, the Falcons are about 3 percentage points worse at converting on third down than the league average. So the average is 39.6, and the Falcons are at 36.4. Drake London could see a lot of Sauce depending on how Lou Anarumo uses him, since Sauce Gardner has faced the opposing team's most targeted receiver at the second highest rate in the league this season. It was 46% with the Jets. So we'll see if that continues now that he's on a different team. Switching over to Indianapolis's offense against Atlanta's defense. Well, let's talk about running back rushes out of shotgun formation. Why? Because Indianapolis does this at the seventh highest rate, 48% of the time. They've earned the fifth most rushing yards over expected per rush on them at 1.1. They have 0.06 EPA per rush. That's third most in the league. And they've had 10 or more yards earned on a particular rush on 14% of shotgun rushes by running backs, the third highest rate in the league. In Atlanta's defense, they've allowed 0.13 EPA per shotgun rush to running backs. That's the third highest rate in the league. They've also allowed over 51% of those rushes to be successful, the second highest rate, and 4 yards after contact per shotgun rush. That's fourth most. And one more, just in case you didn't get my message here, they've allowed 3.7 yards after contact per shotgun rush to running backs. That's sixth most in the league. So what I'm saying is probably a good opportunity for Jonathan Taylor to rush when his quarterback's in the shotgun. All six of Daniel Jones' interceptions have come in games where he's faced a pressure rate of at least 30%. So 30%, remember that, because when it's under 30%, he had 7 touchdowns and no interceptions in those games. Atlanta's defense, what's their pressure rate? 37%. It ranks 8th in the NFL. Daniel Jones against the blitz, what happens? 55.3 completion percentage, 8th lowest in the NFL. Why do I bring that up? Because no one blitzes more than the Falcons at 49%. Bottom line, I have Indianapolis by a touchdown, 28-21. The Colts O-line had what I would call a fluky game against the Steelers, and 4 turnovers in that game also looks to be an outlier data point. Adding Sauce Gardner adds a lot of firepower to a secondary that's been battling injuries. The Colts defense is number 2 at getting pressure when they don't blitz, so they can drop more guys into coverage. And adding to that secondary means this will help a team that already has 10 interceptions, the third most, more reliably defend the pass as well. A single window game means 3 stats to track, and because it's in Germany, dry Statistiken! Eins, Jonathan Taylor to score a touchdown. You could even go for 2 touchdowns here, still smart. Overall, Taylor leads the NFL 895 rushing yards. He also leads with 14 scrimmage touchdowns. He's averaging 5.9 yards per carry. And of course, the Falcons, they're allowing the second highest success rate to the types of rushes Indy uses most effectively. Zwei, Bijan Robinson to score a touchdown. He has some interesting rushing and receiving usage trends, so just stick with him reaching pay dirt. He's averaging 6.7 yards per touch. That's the most in the league. He has fewer than 100 scrimmage yards in 3 straight games after having over 100 in his first 5 games. See what I mean? But he has accounted for 38% of the Falcons' total scrimmage yards, the highest rate in the NFL. Some banged up O-linemen also means just stick with a Robinson touchdown. Drei, Tyler Warren to have at least 43 receiving yards. Falcons, stingiest passing defense, 158.1 yards allowed per game. They've given up just 18 plays of 20 plus yards. That's second fewest. But Warren isn't likely to see much of AJ Terrell and has 518 yards, which is an average of 57.6 yards per game. He's also number 2 among tight ends in total yak and yak per reception. And that yak per reception number, 7.7 yards. I don't know if you can hear in the background or not, but Gordy and Clyde, my dogs, have been howling in the background here for quite some time. They are ready for dog time, and it is now. For each week in November, we're going to support animals in need by picking winners for the 3 biggest underdog games of the week. All you have to do to participate is to comment here on YouTube or in my socials, C. Freeland on X, Cynthia Freeland on Instagram, with the 3 teams that you think will win and the name of an animal rescue. For each correct pick, I'll add it to my helmet, mix it around, and then pull one out of the helmet and donate $100 to that animal charity. Easy peasy. All right, let's get to it. Dog game number 1 of this week. It is Buffalo at Miami. The Bills are 9.5-point road favorites. The total in this one is 50. My model says Bills win 31-20. We're going to start with the news here first, and that's that the Dolphins traded their linebacker Jalen Phillips to the Eagles on Monday for a 2026 third-round pick. Okay, it feels like Howie Roseman may have stolen something again, considering Phillips led the team in pressures, played 73% of the snaps, he had 3 sacks. He's also like a really good person. I don't know, third rounder? Okay, anyways, starting with the Bills offense against the Dolphins defense. Well, the Bills have the number 1 total offense at 385.5 total yards per game. They lead the league, though, with a 6-minute, 51-second time of possession differential. So run game note it is, specifically rushing when the quarterback is under center, something that Buffalo's done on 80% of their rushing attempts, the third highest rate in the league. They have 16 touchdowns, 4 more than anyone else when they've done so, and a 52% success rate, that's 4th highest in the league. They're also averaging 2.1 yards before contact per rush, which is 3rd highest in the league. Thank you, offensive line. Now, how does Miami's defense fare against such rushing attempts? Well, they've allowed 2 rushing yards over expected per rush when opposing quarterbacks are under center, the most in the league. They've also allowed 1.8 yards before contact per rush, the 4th most, and they've allowed an explosive rush on 15% of such rushes. That's the 4th highest in the league. Switching over to Miami's offense against Buffalo's defense. Well, they too have run their offense through their running back, Devon Achane. We talk about him pretty much every week, and for good reason, because only one running back this season has more 90-plus scrimmage yard games than his 7 of 9 played this season, and that's Christian McCaffrey. So Let's add Jaylen Waddle to the mix because he's had 24 receptions and 401 receiving yards along with 2 touchdowns since week 5, the 5th most receiving yards in the NFL over that span. Remember, Tyreek Hill had his season-ending injury happen in week 4. Bottom line, I have the Bills by 11, 31-20, because they were already good at playing keep-away ball control. And now that Jalen Phillips isn't there, their odds of being able to do it against the Dolphins just increased. The one to watch here, let's go Dalton Kincaid to haul in at least 4 passes. I know that each team's running back has great odds of scoring a touchdown, but let's add Kincaid to the mix because it's more fun. He has 27 receptions, leads the team with 411 receiving yards and 4 touchdowns. And what happens when Josh Allen targets him? 82% completion percentage and a 158.1 passer rating. That's second highest among any quarterback receiver duo since Next Gen Stat has been tracking. Dog game number 2. It is Detroit at Washington. The Lions are favored by 9 points on the road. The total in this one is 49.5. My model says a touchdown win for Detroit, 28-21. Let's start with the Lions offense against the Commanders defense. So Jared Goff is averaging 13.5 yards per intermediate pass this season. That is second most in the NFL. And he's averaging 1.06 EPA per intermediate pass. Again, second most. Both of these are just behind Lamar Jackson. And what happens to Washington against such passes? Well, they've allowed 11.7 yards per intermediate pass, second most, and a 10.1 completion percentage over expected to them. That's third highest in the league, along with 28 explosive passes to the intermediate level. So 10 to 19 air yards, which is tied for the most. Switching to Washington's offense against Detroit's defense, Marcus Mariota, he's been blitzed on 43% of his dropbacks. That's the highest rate among the 36 quarterbacks that have at least faced 100 such dropbacks. He has the 15th highest completion percentage at 62%. It's actually higher than Jaden Daniels against the blitz, which is just 47%. And he's averaged 8.2 yards per attempt against it. That's 12th most. The Lions defense, they blitz 31% of the time. That's the 11th highest rate in the league. And when blitzing, they've allowed opposing passers to average 8 yards per attempt, the 10th most. Bottom line, I have Detroit winning, but just by a touchdown, 28-21. Why only 7 points? Well, let's look at a trend that's been going on with Detroit since week 6. They have scored a touchdown on just 43% of their red zone trips since week 6, and that's after scoring one on 76% of their red zone trips in weeks 1-5. That was the third best rate in the league. Jared Goff, keeping him clean, this is a big part of the game. The line is banged up, and he's taken 10 sacks over the last 3 games after taking only 8 in the first 5 games. The one to watch here, it's Amon-Ra St. Brown to have a big game. I have him with at least 80 yards and a trip to the end zone, in part because the Commanders have allowed a league-high 8.4 passing yards per attempt, and in part because they've allowed 24 more points in 7 of 9 games. And then the last part, I expect Johnny Morton to capitalize on Washington's defense, allowing the third most completions, 28, and a league-high 843 yards on vertical routes. Use your best receiver, Johnny. That would be Amon-Ra St. Brown. In our final dog game of the week, it's Arizona at Seattle. The Seahawks are 6.5-point home favorites. Total in this one, 45.5 points. My model says Seahawks win, but just by 5, 25-20. Starting with the news, the Seahawks traded a 4th and 5th round pick in the 26th draft to the Saints for wide receiver Rashid Shaheed. Why? Well, Clint Kubiak effect. Last season, when Clint Kubiak was his Saints offensive coordinator, he averaged 58.2 receiving yards per game and a 17.5 yard per reception average. Now they reunite in Seattle. But we're going to start where we always do, which is the away team's offense against the home team's defense, which means the Jacoby Brissett-led Cardinals offense against the Seahawks defense. Arizona has rushed to the outside on 61% of running back rushing attempts this season, the 5th highest rate in the league. It's not going super great. They're averaging negative 0.1 rushing yard over expected per carry. That's 10th fewest in the league. And Seattle, they've allowed negative 0.4 rushing yards over expected to such rushes, the 6th fewest in the league, along with a negative 0.32 EPA per outside rush to running backs. That's 2nd fewest in the league, and 0.4 yards before contact per outside rush, which is 5th fewest. So maybe don't run to the outside. My note on Seattle's offense against Arizona's defense is about Sam Darnold, who's completed 54 of 78 downfield passes, so 10 plus air yarders, good for 1,271 yards. That's 2nd most in the league, along with a league high 13 touchdowns and just 2 interceptions. So his passer rating is 140.8, and he has a 69% completion percentage. Those are both the best in the NFL, not just this season, but if they hold, they'd be the best since at least 2016. However, the Cardinals defense has allowed the 3rd lowest passer rating at just 66.5 and the 9th lowest completion percentage at 46% on such passes, and they're one of just four teams with more interceptions than touchdowns allowed on such attempts. They have five interceptions to just three touchdowns allowed. Bottom line, I went with stats that show tougher matchups here, so strength versus strength, because I have a closer than expected win forecast for the Seahawks at 25-20. The one to watch here, though, I feel really good about this one. It's the Cardinals to have scored at least 10 points in the first half. Arizona, they're averaging 5.1 more points per game with Jacoby Brissett as a starter compared to Kyler Murray. Brissett, who, by the way, is averaging 286.7 passing yards per game. That's first in the NFL. I have a ton of great notes on Seattle's defense. However, this is a pro Jacoby Brissett point. Those 5.1 more points per game and greater efficiency through the air means 10 or more points scored by the half. Those are the three dog games of the week. So if it were me commenting, I would write straight up, I have Buffalo, Detroit, Seattle. I could also say against the spread, I have Buffalo, Washington, and Arizona. And then I would add Hollywood Huskies, because that is where Gordy was rescued from. That's where I adopted him from. Remember to leave your dog picks in the comments on my socials to get your animal rescue in the mix. Here are my confidence picks for the week in order. Now, these are just to pick winners and not with point spreads factored in. You can get my ATS and total confidence numbers on Numbers Game, numbersga.me, if you want those. Moving on to New York, where the Jets made some huge moves and now have to host Myles Garrett and the Browns. Cleveland comes to town as a 2.5-point favorite. The total in this one, 37.5 points, and my model says Cleveland wins by 7, 21-14. Just to recap the news, the Jets traded away multiple defensive Pro Bowlers in corner Sauce Gardner to the Colts and defensive lineman Quinnen Williams to the Cowboys. In return, they got wide receiver A.D. Mitchell and defensive tackle Mazi Smith, and like a ton of draft picks. So three firsts, a second, and a sixth in the 26 and 27 drafts combined. We talked about this in NFL IQ, and I definitely have more to say about these moves in our midseason review show. So that's two teases right there. Starting with the Browns offense against the Jets defense, rookie running back Quinshon Judkins has 104 rushing yards over expected this season. That ranks sixth most among all running backs, and he's done it in fewer games. And by the way, it's 42 more than the next closest rookie, who's Jacory Kroski-Merritt. But Judkins only has forced 17% of tackles to be missed. That's the fifth lowest rate among backs, but he's earned 183 yards after forcing missed tackles. That's ninth most at the position. It probably helps that he has four carries of 30 or more rushing yards, which is tied for the most in the league. And 96% of his rushing yards have come after contact. That's second most in the league. So no Quinnen Williams, and the Jets defense becomes even more generous to opposing backs. As for my New York offensive note against Cleveland's defense, well, Justin Fields has been pressured on 47% of his dropbacks, the second highest rate in the league. He's been sacked on 10% of his dropbacks. That's fourth highest. And he has a 5.3 yard per pass attempt win pressure average. That's ninth fewest. As for Cleveland's defense, they have a 36% pressure rate this season, which ranks 12th. They've sacked their opponent at the third highest rate, 9% of the time. And they've allowed just a 28% dropback success rate when they're getting pressure. So that's third lowest in the league. Just as a reminder, Myles Garrett has 10 sacks, which ranks number two in the league, and 15 tackles for loss, which is number one. In fact, Myles Garrett against the Jets, well, he has 10 sacks in six career games. He's had two or more sacks in three of those six games, which is the most sacks by Garrett against any non-divisional opponent. Bottom line, I have the Browns by 7, 21-14. The one to watch here, Harold Fannin Jr. He has 38 receptions in eight games. He had six grabs last time out against the Patriots. My model has him with at least five catches and 41 yards with a 41% chance of scoring a touchdown in my median projections. Dylan Gabriel has been averaging 4.9 passing yards per attempt. His new play caller in Tommy Rees, but connecting with Fannin Jr. is a part of the strategy that forecasts to remain smart or maybe even increase in volume. New Orleans traded away Rashid Shaheed to Seattle, and this week they travel to Carolina. The Panthers are favored by 5.5 points. The total in this one is 40 points, and my model says a 4-point win for Carolina, 23-19. Starting with the Saints offense against the Panthers defense. Well, New Orleans, 57% of their rushing attempts have been from the shotgun formation this season, the fifth highest rate in the league. They're averaging the fourth fewest EPA per shotgun rush this season at -0.15. And Carolina, they've allowed the fewest rushing yards over expected to such rushes, so shotgun rushes, at -0.8. They've also allowed the lowest success rate to them at 31%. Moving over to Carolina's offense, which is a big reason why they're 5-4, meaning they have a winning record against New Orleans defense. This is all about Rico Dowdle. He leads the league with 652 rushing yards since week 5. That's when he made his first start. He has 735 total on the season, which already is third most in the league. This is ridiculous. He leads the league with 173 rushing yards per game and 204.7 scrimmage yards per game as a starter. That's both the most by any player in a season since the 1970 merger. We get it. That's ridiculous. Now, Dowdle has also earned 172 rushing yards over expected. That's third most. He's also been very great on outside rushes. He leads all rushers with 144 yards over expected on such runs, along with a league best 7.1 yards per carry and a 56% success rate when rushing outside. And the Saints overall have allowed 988 rushing yards to running backs, ranking sixth most in the league. Bottom line, I have Carolina winning this one, but just by 4, 23-19. It's closer than expected, in part because Bryce Young is only 40 of 70 for 374 yards with just one of his 11 total touchdowns and earned 3 of his 6 interceptions against cover 3. That is good for the third lowest success rate against it. And the Saints use cover 3 the most of any team in the league at 48%. The one to watch here, it's Saints quarterback Tyler Shuck to throw at least one passing touchdown. I know they traded away Rashid Shaheed, but Chris Olave ranks 7th in the NFL with 55 receptions, and he leads the team with 560 yards and 3 touchdowns. He has 87 targets this season, which is 2nd most in the NFL behind only Ja'Marr Chase. Moving on to a very consequential matchup in the AFC South between the Jags and Texans in Houston. Jacksonville is favored by 1 point, the total in this one, 37.5. My model says Houston still manages to win it 19-18. This one flipped in terms of who was favored from a Houston win to a Jacksonville win on the news that Davis Mills would be the quarterback with CJ Stroud out with a concussion. Starting with the news first, the Jags traded for the Raiders wide receiver Jacoby Myers on Tuesday in exchange for giving up a 4th and 6th round pick in the 2026 draft. They are probably trying to give a little spark to their offense, an offense that has averaged just 16.3 points per game since week 6 after averaging 25.4 in weeks 1 through 5. Now, my note this week on the Jags offense against the Texans defense is really that the Jags offensive line has allowed 5 sacks per game since week 6. So that timeline really matches up. That is tied for the most in the NFL. And Houston's defense, well, they're the number one scoring defense at 15.1 points per game and total defense at 267.4 yards per game. They've had 10 takeaways since week 5, which is tied for the most in the league. But Will Anderson Jr., he has 6 sacks and 12 quarterback hits, good for a 20% pressure rate. That is second best in the NFL. So not a great matchup here for the Jags O-line that's been struggling. As for Houston's offense against Jacksonville's defense, well, the Texans overall are averaging 21 points per game, which is tied for 24th. With Davis Mills under center, they'll need to lean on both Nico Collins, who leads the team with 414 receiving yards, and he's tied with 3 receiving touchdowns. The guy he's tied with is the other guy they'll probably need to lean on, a rookie running back in Woody Marks. He has 3 scrimmage touchdowns and 406 scrimmage yards. So when I'm looking at this one, Davis Mills will ask more of his skill players. Bottom line in this one, I have a 1-point win for Houston, 19-18, an upset in a very low-scoring game. Houston's defense drives the day, though. Why? Well, they're only blitzing 24% of the time. That's the 11th lowest rate. And they've allowed negative 0.34 EPA per dropback when they don't blitz. That's the best lowest in the NFL. They've also allowed a 38% dropback success rate without blitzing, second lowest in the NFL, and forced 9 interceptions under these conditions, aka when not blitzing. That is tied for the most in the league. Trevor Lawrence is averaging 5.8 yards per pass attempt when teams haven't blitzed him. That's the 3rd fewest among quarterbacks. And he has a negative 4.2 completion percentage over expected, 5th lowest, along with the 7th lowest EPA per dropback number at negative 0.14. Now, I think adding Jacoby Myers will help in the long run, but these corners and this defense is a tough first outing to establish chemistry with Trevor Lawrence. The one to watch here, Houston, to be leading or trailing by no more than 1 point at the half. The New York Giants head to Soldier Field for a matchup with the Bears. Chicago is favored by 3.5 points, and the total in this one, 48 points. My model says the Bears win 27-22. Now, I'm going to tell you my favorite Giants offensive note, but it's a little history note here. It's that Jackson Dart is the only quarterback since 1970 with one or more passing touchdowns and one or more rushing touchdowns in 5 of his first 6 NFL starts. In fact, he has 15 offensive touchdowns since week 4, which is tied for the 3rd most in the league. He's also scrambling at an over 10% rate, the fifth highest in the league. He has 791 passing yards and 6 touchdowns with no interceptions when facing no pressure on throws. In this round of the transfer portal is crazy. Did you know that Jackson Dart and Caleb Williams both played at USC? Dart was there in 2021 and Williams was there from 2022 to 2023. Speaking of Caleb Williams, my Bears note is that he has 7 passing touchdowns and no interceptions combined against the Cowboys and Bengals defenses, compared to 5 touchdowns with 4 interceptions combined in all other 6 games. Now the pressure splits, okay? 69% completion percentage, 10 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, 106.8 passer rating with no pressure. Under pressure, 44% completion percentage, 2 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, and a 59.9 passer rating. Williams has the longest time to throw at 3.24 seconds in the next-gen stats era, but the Giants' defense has 53 quick pressures, which is tied for the 5th most. And Williams does have 753 passing yards against the blitz, which is the 3rd most. So we'll have to see if the pressure works, the blitzing works, or maybe just the quick pressures are working, because Caleb Williams is taking a longer time to throw. Bottom line in this one, the Bears win by 5, 27-22. Why a bigger than expected win, you ask? Oh, the run game, the outside run game advantage for the Bears against the Giants defense. Until they fix it, I'm just going to keep bringing it up. Okay, so Chicago has run to the outside 63% of the time with their running backs. That's the second highest rate. They have a 50% success rate on them, second highest rate. They've gotten 10 or more yards on 21% of such rushes, highest in the NFL. They are averaging 1.9 yards before contact on rushes outside. Yep, that's 3rd most in the league. And they have a 0.11 EPA per outside rush, which is 4th best. As for New York's defense, 2 outside rushes. You ready for it? 3 rushing yards over expected per rush, the most. 0.26 EPA per outside rush, the most. A 55.4 success rate, the highest. 2.8 yards before contact per outside rush, the most. And they've allowed 10 or more yards per rush on 27% of outside rushes, the highest in the NFL by 5.1 percentage points. The one to watch here, Colston Loveland. I bet you thought I was going to talk about a Bears running back, didn't you? I would have loved to, but even though DeAndre Swift has been back at practice, I don't want to get burnt again by him. So he or Kyle Manungai, whomever is starting or playing for that matter, is a good pick to score a touchdown. But back to Loveland, the NFC Offensive Player of the Week. He's going to have at least 38 receiving yards. Even if Cole Kmet is able to return, it doesn't matter. I think the pressure outlet for Williams will be Loveland to the tune of at least 38 yards. We did our 3 underdog games. Then we got through our veggie games of the week. And now we get to the entrees, as in the 4 best games of Sunday, the ones we've all been waiting for, starting with the Ravens at the Vikings, where Baltimore's a 4-point road favorite. The total's 48.5 points. My model says Baltimore wins 26-21. First, the news, the Ravens acquired edge rusher Draymond Jones from the Titans, but we'll start with the Ravens offense, of course, because that's where we start, against the Vikings defense. Lamar Jackson, his scramble rate is 16%. That's 11th highest. When he passes, he's averaging 0.56 EPA per dropback. That's the most. And he has a 15.1 completion percentage over expected, the 3rd highest at the position. And Minnesota, 2 such passes, they've allowed a 10.3% completion percentage over expected, the 2nd highest. What happens when Jackson runs on scrambles? 9.6 yards per rush is his average. That's 3rd highest. And Minnesota, they've allowed the 6th most rushing yards over expected per scramble at 2.4. One thing I want to bring up is the impact of Andrew Van Ginkel. So Minnesota's defense on the whole, they've blitzed 44% of the time, the 2nd highest rate in the league. They've sent 6 or more pass rushers on 12% of dropbacks. That's 3rd most. They've pressured opponents on 40% of their dropbacks, the 3rd highest rate. And they pressured opponents 49% of the time when Van Ginkel is on the field, compared to just under 40% when he's not there. Now, Lamar Jackson, he has the highest success rate, 59%, and the highest passer rating at 136.4 when he's been blitzed this season. But we have 2 games of history between B-Flow coached defenses, Brian Flores and Jackson, and they're 1-1, so each one has a win. Jackson faced a max blitz on 13 dropbacks in week 10 of 2021. He was sacked 3 times in that game, and that was tied for the most max blitzes faced by Jackson in a game in his career. So be on the lookout for that. Looking at Minnesota's offense against Baltimore's defense, of course we're going to talk about J.J. McCarthy. He has an average time to throw of 3.12 seconds. That's 3rd longest in the NFL. In his return from injury last week, we started to see something happen with quick passes. So he went 6 of 7 for 66 yards and a touchdown on throws happening in under 2.5 seconds, compared to 8 of 18 for 77 yards with a touchdown and an interception on throws that took longer than 2.5 seconds. So meaning the coverage was working and making him uncomfortable. Will the Ravens be able to make McCarthy hang on to the ball and not get his quick rhythm going? Will Draymond Jones help the second lowest pressure rate defense? It's just 26%. Who's tied for the second fewest sacks at 11? Kind of get that pressure on McCarthy as well. It follows that we should probably check on Kyle Hamilton's usage again here, just based on what we talked about with the coverage. And of course, in weeks 1 through 4, he only aligned in the box 17% of the time. But since week 6, he's been in the box on 57% of snaps. So interesting strategic note there. Bottom line, I have the Ravens by 5 on the road, 26-21. Lamar Jackson leads the NFL with a 136.7 passer rating and an 11.9 touchdown percentage. His 14 passes on just 118 attempts. Interesting note here. Quarterbacks making one of their first 10 career starts are 0-12 versus Lamar Jackson. And John Harbaugh is 52-18 when facing a starting quarterback in his first or second NFL start. That's the third best record by a head coach since 1950. We don't have stats on if they were coached in college by his brother. Jokes! I've got jokes. Anyways, okay. The one to watch here is Justin Jefferson to have fewer than 7 receptions in the game. He averages just 4.3 receptions per game and 57.3 receiving yards per game in his 3 games with J.J. McCarthy as the starter. That's his lowest with any starting quarterback. So the chemistry, it's developing, probably not necessarily there yet in terms of getting 7 receptions. The Rams travel to Santa Clara for their second matchup with the Niners this season. This time, L.A. is favored by 3.5 points on the road. The total, 49.5. My model says Rams win it, but only by 2 points, 24-20. Starting with that Rams offense against the Niners defense, let's talk about Matthew Stafford, who leads the NFL with an average of 268.4 passing yards per game. He has 21 passing touchdowns, which is good for a career high 21-2 touchdown to interception ratio, along with a 113.2 passer rating. He is the fourth player, and this is the fifth instance in NFL history, to have 20 or more passing touchdowns with 2 or fewer interceptions in a team's first 8 games of a season. He's averaging 0.2 EPA per dropback versus no blitz this season. So when teams have it blitzed, that's fifth best. He's averaging 8.4 yards per attempt. That's fifth highest under those same circumstances, along with having a 53% dropback success rate when teams have not rushed extra pass rushers. Fifth highest. The Niners, well, they're only blitzing at the fifth lowest rate, 22%, and they've only gotten overall a pressure rate of 22% when they haven't blitzed. That's second lowest in the league. They've allowed 0.09 EPA per dropback without blitzing, eighth highest. And of course, that means advantage Stafford. Maybe he's even in contention for MVP. That's what I'm saying this season. As for San Francisco's offense against Los Angeles's defense, well, Christian McCaffrey is also making some history. He became the first player in the Super Bowl era with at least 550 rush yards and 600 or more receiving yards in his first 9 games of the season. He has the most touches in 9 games in San Francisco history with 229. His average in 5 career games against the Rams, 158 scrimmage yards per game. You want an example of how Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay play chess with each other? And by the way, we all win getting to watch this. So Christian McCaffrey, overall this season, he's been targeted or received a carry on 29 of his 84 snaps in motion. That's a 35% rate. That's the fourth highest motion opportunity rate among skill players this season. He has turned those opportunities into 151 scrimmage yards with 2 touchdowns, 113 through the air and 38 on the ground. That's the 6th most overall such yards in the league. In week 5 against the Rams, though, McCaffrey was targeted just twice and did not receive 1 single carry across 15 snaps in motion. That's a 13% rate. And he had just 9 scrimmage yards with those 2 receptions. So 9 scrimmage yards off of 2 receptions. So they're playing a lot of chess here. Good news is we do all win watching these 2 go at it. Bottom line, I have the Rams evening out the series with the Niners 24-22. Adding rookie Michael Williams to IR pretty much means their whole defensive line is not what they were planning this season, which helps drive a projected Rams win. The one to watch here, let's keep it simple. It's Christian McCaffrey to have at least 6 receptions. He has 80 targets on the season. That's third most among all skill players and 20 more than the next closest running back. Now the Rams defense, they have 27 sacks. That's tied for the third most. And they have 16 more sacks than San Francisco, despite playing 1 fewer game. So lots of pressure means an escape valve, which likely involves McCaffrey. Sunday Night Football is at SoFi Stadium when the Pittsburgh Steelers come to town. The Chargers are 3-point home favorites. The total in this one is 45 points. And my model, picks the upset, Pittsburgh to win it 24-22. Let's start with the Steelers offense against the Charger defense. Aaron Rodgers is 12 of 24 for 194, two touchdowns and just one interception while scrambling this season. That's the third most scrambled passing yards in the league. It also happens to be 12% of his dropbacks, which is his highest rate in a single season since 2019. Now, on passes that he's thrown outside the pocket, he has the third most yards, 384, the second most touchdowns with six, and he has the fourth most yards per attempt at 9.4. And that's good for the fourth highest pass rating at 119.3. He still got it. Old people, we matter too. 41, you're not dead when you turn 41, just so you know. As for what's specific to this matchup, Aaron Rodgers has thrown 9 touchdowns against zone coverage this season. That's tied for the second most in the league. He has a 73% completion percentage. That's sixth highest. And we know they don't throw deep all that often, but he's averaging 7.4 yards per attempt against zone. That's 17th in the league. Now, the Chargers have used zone 85% of the time, the second highest rate in the league. And it's worked for them. They are allowing the third lowest passer rating to it at 73.5, the fifth fewest yards per attempt at 6.5, and the fifth lowest completion percentage at 63%. Well, what about the other quarterback in this matchup? That would be LA's offense against Pittsburgh's defense. And Justin Herbert ranks second in the NFL with 2,390 passing yards, and he ranks third in pass attempts at 325. He has 305 rushing yards too, which is the most among quarterbacks, and just 1 yard shy of his career high. But you know where I'm going to bring up here. It's all about pressure. It's Justin Herbert has thrown 5 interceptions when pressured. That's second most in the league. He's been pressured at the third highest rate, 43% of the time. And Pittsburgh, they had 18 pressures in week 9. They allowed a negative 0.62 EPA per dropback with pressure on the season. That's third fewest in the league. They have a 28% dropback success rate when they're able to get pressure. That's seventh lowest in the NFL. Bottom line here, no Joe Alt for the Chargers and injuries in general drive the upset at SoFi 24-22. Justin Herbert has been pressured on 46% of his dropbacks with Joe Alt off the field and 40% when he's been on the field. The one to watch here, it's Jaylen Warren's longest rush to be for at least 13 yards. So Warren has forced a missed tackle on 34% of his touches this season. That's the second highest rate in the league. And the Chargers have missed tackles at a rate of 15% this season, which is third highest in the league. When missing a tackle, they've also surrendered the fifth most extra yards at 502. I think this next one is the best game of Sunday's action. It is the Patriots at the Buccaneers. Tampa Bay is favored by 2.5 points, and the total is 48.5. My model says, oh yeah, another upset. New England wins 26-25. Let's start with the Patriots offense against the Bucs defense first. Drake May leads the NFL with a 74% completion percentage. He has 200 or more passing yards and a 100-plus passer rating in each of his last 8 games. That is tied for the longest such streak within a season in NFL history. He's also tied with Sam Darnold for the best completion percentage at 68.2 and passer rating at 150.6 on deep passes. And we know this Todd Bowles defense is going to blitz. They've done it on 35% of opponent dropbacks, the seventh highest rate. They've averaged almost 7, so 6.6 pressures per game when blitzing. That's second in the NFL behind only Denver. So how does Drake May fare against the blitz? He's second among qualified quarterbacks with a 73% completion percentage and third with a 125.6 passer rating. Last week, he faced a season-high blitz rate, 54%. That was against the Falcons. They earned 10 pressures and 4 sacks when they sent 5 or more rushers. More specifically, they blitzed on 7 of 11 third and fourth down dropbacks, 73%. That's the highest blitz rate on later downs May has seen this season. Against it, he completed 10 of 16 for 137 and a season-high 83 yards coming off of third and fourth down completions. Switching sides to Tampa's offense against New England's defense, it's all about Baker Mayfield in the intermediate pass, so 10 to 19 air yard passes. He has done this on 26% of his attempts, that's the fourth highest rate, and he's completed 46% of intermediate passes, which is sixth lowest. This is the impact of missing some of your receivers. He has a 0.08 EPA per intermediate pass, that's eighth lowest, and New England is really good at stopping such passes. They've allowed 8.4 yards per intermediate pass this season. That's the fifth fewest in the league. They've also forced 4 interceptions on such passes, tied for the fifth most, and they've allowed a 0.19 EPA per intermediate pass, which is seventh fewest. So point being is missing some of your key wide receivers makes that number harder to overcome considering the Pats are good at it. But the good news is for Tampa Bay is that they're getting healthier. Bottom line, this is my least confident pick of the week, but I have a 1-point win for the Pats on the road, 26-25. Why and how? Well, New England's defense has allowed just 75.4 rushing yards per game. That's fewest in the league. And they haven't allowed an opposing running back to hit 50 rushing yards in each game. That's the longest streak to begin a season by any team in the Super Bowl era. The Bucs running backs rank last in the NFL in yards per carry at 3.5. They're the only team in the NFL without a running back carry for more than 16 yards as well. The one to watch here, well, it's Drake May to have at least two passing touchdowns, a threshold he's passed in all but two games this season. I also think his longest pass will gain more than 37 yards, which he's done in all four of his last four games. Let's do a little good for six here before we add the Monday Nighter to the show. These are six stats to track for Sunday's games in order of least to most risky. And if I don't add them here, then know the supporting stats for all of these picks are already in the show. Number one, Bucs quarterback Baker Mayfield to pass for at least two touchdowns against the Pats. Number two, Browns running back Quinshon Judkins to score a touchdown against the Jets. Number three, Rams running back Kyren Williams to score a touchdown against the Niners. No Fred Warner and all the other injuries makes this a very high probability outcome. Number four, Ravens tight end Mark Andrews to catch at least three passes against the Vikings. I want the full touchdown too, but Lamar Jackson has averaged 0.129 EPA per dropback on intermediate throws, 10 to 19 air yards. That is 0.23 higher than the next closest quarterback. In week nine against the Dolphins, he completed four of five such passes for 84 yards and two touchdowns. Intermediate passes, think Mark Andrews. Number five, Chargers tight end Arondé Gadsden's longest reception to net more than 18 and a half yards. That is something he has passed in all four of his last four games. Gadsden has averaged 8.5 air yards per target this season. That's third most among tight ends. And 11% of his targets have been deep targets, so 20 plus air yards. That is second most at the position. He's also earned 128 deep receiving yards total, the most among tight ends. And number six, Chargers quarterback Justin Herbert's longest rush to net at least 11 yards. Now, he's reached at least 11 in all but three games this season. He has scrambled to run on a career-high 7% of his dropbacks and leads the entire NFL in scramble rushing yards with 293. He has a 10.9 yard per scramble rush average and an 82% success rate. The Steelers' defense, they haven't seen a ton of scrambles, actually the second fewest at just 11, but they've allowed 67 total yards to them, which is why I think there's risk, but I think 11 plus is achievable. And last but absolutely not least, it is Lambeau Field. It is Monday night. The Eagles come to town. Green Bay's favored by 2.5 points. The total is 44.5. And what does my model say? Eagles win 24-23. Let's recap the trades here. So the Eagles traded for Jalen Phillips. They got him from the Dolphins. They stole him from the Dolphins for a third round pick. They also got Jaire Alexander from the Ravens. You want to know something cool here about that? Well, his defensive backs coach here for the Eagles now, his name's Christian Parker. He used to work with him a long time ago, a couple stops ago for Parker, at the Packers. So they have a familiarity there. Jaire Alexander has played, so things have been maybe a little bit weird with the Ravens this season. So that reunion could prove to be very, very powerful should Ja kind of get back in his rhythm with Christian Parker. Let's talk a little bit more about Jalen Hurts, who ranks top three in yards per attempt, touchdown to interception ratio, and passer rating on downfield passes. So on these 10 plus air yards, he's averaging 14.5 yards per attempt. That's second. He has seven touchdowns and no interceptions and a 136.2 passer rating. That's third. He also leads the NFL with 16 completions and 615 passing yards on deep throws. And Green Bay's defense, they're allowing just a 49.5 passer rating on deep passes. That's fourth lowest. Circle this one, though. Jalen Hurts has been sacked 25 times, fourth most. And Philadelphia has allowed the sixth highest quarterback pressure rate, 39%. What is the latest on the Parsons effect? Somebody tell me. Green Bay opponents have averaged 4.9 air yards per attempt with him on the field and 7.5 air yards per attempt when Parsons is off the field. Packers' time to pressure changes from 3.08 when he's not there to 2.69 when he's there. Now, as for Green Bay's offense against Philadelphia's defense, Jordan Love has averaged 9.1 yards per attempt against man this season, second highest in the NFL. He has 11 touchdown passes, that's tied for third most, and he has a passer rating of 122, fifth highest against man. The Eagles have played man on 35% of their dropbacks, eighth highest, and they allow 5.6 yards per attempt, eighth fewest. They also allow just three touchdowns with three interceptions. That gives them a league low 68.5 passer rating when using man. Overall, Jordan Love has a 70.8 completion percentage and has averaged 8.3 yards per pass attempt. Both of those rank fourth best in the league. However, all of these numbers were with Tucker Kraft. Love had a 148.6 passer rating when targeting him. That's the highest among all quarterback receiver duos overall. And against man coverage specifically, Kraft has accounted for 43.8% of the Packers' receiving yards and 5 of their 11 touchdowns. Last note here, if the Eagles' defense isn't able to pressure Jordan Love, it could be a very long, tough day for them at Lambeau Field. Right now, Philly ranks 19th in pressure rate. That's why they added Jalen Phillips. But here are Love's splits. So he averages just 4.8 passing yards per attempt under pressure. That's third fewest. But when he's not under pressure, second in passing yards per attempt, and the fourth best passer rating. Bottom line, I have a 1-point upset, 24-23 by the Eagles at Lambeau Field. Now, you can't just look at this Green Bay defense and say they're great against the run. They've allowed just 89.4 rushing yards per game. That's fifth fewest. So you have to go deeper to see how this matches up with the Eagles specifically. So the Eagles have faced a stacked box, 8 or more defenders, 33% of the time, the sixth highest rate. What happens when they do? Well, they've earned 0.7 rushing yards over expected per carry, ninth most, and they've earned positive yards over expected 52% of the time, second highest rate, and 0.05 EPA, which is the eighth most. Green Bay's defense, when they stack the box, they've allowed 1 rushing yard over expected, the sixth most, 0.11 EPA per carry, the fourth most, a success rate of 47%, that's fifth highest, and they've allowed an explosive run, so 10 or more rushing yards, on 11.1% of rushes defended with a stacked box, the sixth highest rate. Now, my one to watch here is A.J. Brown to have at least 57 receiving yards. The Packers have allowed 930 yards to receivers aligned out wide. That's 11th most and 7.8 per target. Let's round this episode out with 3 snacks for Monday Night Football. These are 3 stats to track in Philadelphia at Green Bay. Number 1, Saquon Barkley to have at least 3 receptions. The Packers have allowed the third fewest yards to receivers aligned in the slot, so perhaps some of the volume that may have gone to Devontae Smith or Dallas Goedert will check down to Barkley. Number 2, Josh Jacobs to have at least 3 receptions. No Tucker Kraft is a problem to solve for, and Jacobs on the ground and Jacobs through the air is one high probability solve. Number 3, the Eagles to either be ahead or not trailing by more than 1 point at the end of 1 quarter. Now, the Eagles have a remade defensive front, and no Tucker Kraft is going to take a minute or maybe 15 minutes to get used to for the Packers offense. So these two things combined to give a high probability of the Eagles either being ahead or not trailing by more than 1 point at the end of 15 minutes played. Before we completely finish the show, we need to answer the trivia question, obviously, which is, who are the 2 running backs in NFL history that have averaged at least 5 yards per carry and at least 90 scrimmage yards per game? They are Jim Brown and Barry Sanders. So Jonathan Taylor could join a very Hall of Fame crew with those numbers. And that's it. Those are the remaining 13 games for week 10. Thank you so much for hanging out. I always really appreciate it. Make sure you check out the new fantasy content. I know I'm getting so much out of that. We will have our special rest of the season. I need to think of a better name for this, but you know, a season preview, our mid-season review preview. We like to look forward because we want to know what's going to happen so we can get ahead of the game and get a little bit of an edge. So that's going to be happening early next week. Thank you so much again for hanging out. I can't say it enough. If you want to go check out all of my numbers, you can get them on Numbers Game, numbersga.me. We'll be back here early next week. And most importantly, enjoy the football.